trickiest case I've worked as a private investigator. I've been working as a private investigator for 6 years now. You may have some crazy ideas about that, but it's far less glamorous than you might think. Most of my work involves following around unfaithful spouses or doing research into political candidates for their opponents. It's not what I was hoping for when I got my journalism degree, but it pays the bills, I guess. Living here in Chicago, it's hard to ask for more than that. A few days back, I was sitting in a coffee shop waiting for a client to arrive. He'd called me that morning sounding desperate. I was happy about that. Desperate clients are usually prepared to pay more. My client arrived a few minutes later, looking around nervously. He was in his late 20s and dressed fairly casually, but his watch and his shoes told me that he came for money. "Thanks for meeting with me," he said. "I'm Colin Westwood and I need your help." I motioned for him to sit down and asked him what I could do for him. "My father," he said. "He's been missing for 5 whole days now, but the police told me that they don't even have an investigator on his case. It's not like him to disappear like this, and I'm worried about him." I sat back in my chair. I'd never done a missing persons case before. "This kind of thing falls a little out of my expertise," I said. "I don't care," he nearly shouted. "Listen, I've done my research, and you were the guy that a family friend pointed me toward." He rubbed his forehead. "Look, I can't trust just anybody with this. I'll pay you extra for your trouble. I promise." I thought it over and decided to take the case. It'd be good experience, and earning favors with the upper crust of this city might come in handy someday. I headed home to my office and did some research. Colin sent me his father's files, and I spent the better part of the afternoon and evening looking through them. Colin's father was a self-made millionaire who owned several factories in the industrial district here in Chicago. I also saw that he had made an offer on a building in an older area of the city. I decided to go for a drive to clear my head and think. I'm a fan of night drives, especially through the city. There's not much better than the feeling you get when you drive alone at night or see a city skyline at dusk with wind in your face. Put on some synthwave, drive under the streetlights. Basically stuff from the subreddit, r/the night feeling, you know? Anyway, I found myself driving to this property. I'm not an idiot, so I was keeping an eye out all around me for anyone who might want to jump me. The factory was old, one of the older ones I'd ever seen. I took a picture which you can see here. That's when I saw a blur of motion in the door mirror on the right side of my car. My back right window was smashed, and the inside of my car was littered with the explosion of safety glass. I looked back to see who was attacking my car, but saw nothing. I hit the gas and sped away, still looking backwards. The street was well lit, and there was nowhere to hide. But I saw no one in the street. When I looked forward again, my eye was drawn to my rearview mirror. It revealed a man standing motionless in the street, staring at me. The man looked badly burned. I sped back to my apartment, shaken. I did some research that night and saw that the factory had been a host to dozens of accidents and disasters over the years. Still, I thought, that was the case for most old factories in Chicago. I told myself it must have been a crazy homeless guy, nothing more. Why I only saw him in my mirrors, I didn't know. The next morning, I called Colin and told him that I was going to go into the factory. "I'm coming with you," he said. I was secretly glad. The idea of exploring the place alone, even during the day, didn't appeal to me. I met Colin in front of the factory that morning and we made our way in. It was decrepit. It looked like it hadn't been used for at least a decade. "Look at the walls here," Colin said. "There's soot everywhere." It was true. Black soot stained the brick of the walls. We walked into the back of the building, and I forced a door open. I jumped back and cursed under my breath. Colin peered forward and let out a slow breath. "Well, you don't see that every day." It was a circular stairway that curved down for as far as I could see. I pulled out my phone and took a picture, which you can see here. Colin knelt down and picked up something off the ground, his hand clenched tight. "We have to go down there," he said. "Are you crazy? We'd die," I said. He held out his hand to me, revealing a small pin flashlight. This was on the ground there. It's my dad's light. He never leaves home without it. If this is here, he must be down there. I stared at the light, then Colin, and finally shrugged. If you want to go down there, be my guest. Colin flipped on the light and started his way down the stairs. They were far sturdier than I had thought and didn't make so much as a creak as he made his way down them. I stayed up top for a moment, but finally gave in and used my phone's light as I made my way after him. There was a corridor at the bottom of the stairs that led out further. I found a switch and flipped it, and flickers of light appeared every 30 feet or so. As we walked down the hallway, a layer of water appeared. It was just a few inches deep, but it reeked of mold and mildew. Colin brought his sleeve to his face, trying in vain to breathe through it. Okay, maybe we should come back with more. He trailed off as his eyes caught on something. I followed his gaze and saw what he'd been looking at. A foot and part of a leg were sticking out of a room down the corridor. We ran for it and turned the corner. It was Colin's father. He had been dead for several days at least. Colin was in disbelief. No, he said, almost a whisper. That's when I heard the sound of splashing water echo from down the hallway. My mind flashed to the night before, and I stepped away from Colin. I heard another splash and saw a wave of water appear some 30 feet in front of me, as if someone had thrown a rock into the murky water. I pulled out my phone and took a picture, and that's when I realized what I was seeing. The area was well illuminated by the flickering lights, but I saw nothing there. But when I looked down to the water, I saw the burned man from the night before staring at me in the water's reflection. I edited the picture so the man is easier to see. Here's the picture I took of the man. Colin, I said, my voice strained. We need to go. Now. Colin walked into the hallway half in a daze. What's going on? Then he saw the reflection too. What is? The water splashed again, and I saw him staring at the man reflected in the water. The burned man started walking towards us. We both turned and ran for the stairs, almost falling in the water. We heard the sound of splashing behind us, but it stopped when we reached the top of the stairs and slammed the door behind us. We made it out of the factory and to our cars. We drove until we were nearly on the other side of the city. I called the police when I finally stopped. Their full investigation ruled that Colin's father had been strangled to death. I don't know what to think, but if I learn anything else, I'll update you all here.